if there's any reason to watch Evil Dead 2, it's the hand stuff.
That's intentional. That's intentional. You think the Raimis didn't put that in?
Welcome, plotters, to this month's podcast. I'm Jen McQuaid.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm. And you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
Who picked this month?
I did.
Oh.
This was me.
It's just, oh, I didn't realize it was you continuing to ruin your childhood.
Well, number one, I wanted to just get out of the 80s. We've been doing a lot of 80s lately.
Mm.
And my previous selections have been for the betterment of the podcast and not necessarily ones that were specifically, hey, let's do this. So my previous two picks were Green Ghost and Man Baby. And although those are great episodes and I think we had a lot of fun, those were more us trying to reach out a little bit more and get a little bit more attention from, try to get a couple more extra listeners that wouldn't necessarily listen or be able to discover us.
Yeah, we were looking for our indie weirdo friends.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're here, we love you for that. But back to some regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it might be good to get us into the 90s because there isn't a lot in the 90s that we have found to do. I think Mars Attacks should still be.
I'm super down to do Mars Attacks. I'm even willing to do Tank Girl at this point. Like, I love me some sci-fi and we haven't done a ton of it. We've done quite a bit, but not like as much as I want.
Cool. Naomi, how did you come to this movie?
So go with me in the way, way back machine to 1999. Wow, Jen, we both love Red Dwarf. That's a fantastic show. I can't believe you have them all recorded off PBS and you edited out the commercials. That's so cool. What are other things that you like? Well, Naomi, I like Army of Darkness and Evil Dead. And I'm like, I don't know that at all. Well, we'll watch it now. This is amazing! Yes, and we will watch it and purchase it in perpetuity for the rest of our lives. Fantastic!
Yay!
That was it. That's like the whole model dialogue about that.
Yeah, I had all three of the Evil Dead films on regular DVD, and then a couple of extra ones. I think it was just the one and the two that were in that extra foam Necronomicon case.
When we found that at the store, we were like, yoink.
Yeah. And then we had to get it on Blu-ray.
Obviously. Obviously.
Lydia?
For me, I just always had like a cursory knowledge of this movie, partly because I hang out with you guys. I think that's where the phrase Hail to the King, like that was the first time that I had heard that was because of you guys. So, but I've actually never seen this movie until we did it for the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, I saw The Evil Dead, the first one.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, so I can see the kind of camp and everything. I haven't seen Evil Dead 2, but I do know from just, you know, cultural osmosis that that is a reboot of the first one, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a bigger budget. They attacked it a second time.
Yeah. Did they make it in The Evil Dead 2, that was like a little bit more campier. Like yeah. The first one was more serious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they came out with it again in 2000.
Yeah.
And that was super serious. Like yeah. I went into it and I was like, what the hell am I watching?
Yeah.
I did like that it had a female lead.
Yeah. Yeah. A woman lead.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that. A lady lead.
That being said, I do know of Sam Raimi's work because of Xena Warrior Princess, and he actually worked with Rob Taper, who is a producer on this film. That's where I know Sam Raimi from is Xena and
Spider-Man.
Yeah, there was you had his brother Ted Raimi, who's in like all of his works, and I love it.
Yeah,
and I don't ever want that to change.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of his work on Xena and on Spider-Man, so it's like it's really hard not to, you know, enjoy aspects of this film because I can see his style in this in other things. So
yeah, I agree. Naomi and I actually in 2021, November 2021, we flew down to Colorado for the very first Bruce Fest and we got to meet the guy And we also got to watch each of the Evil Dead movies with him as a live audience. And he would go through, and when he had something to say, he would just pause the DVD and tell us all of the background that
like
happened.
Now this guy. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a bit almost like this podcast in that it was like way longer than the film needed to be, but we wanted every second of every juicy detail about it.
Yeah. I got served a ginger ale by him. There was a little walkthrough where we thought it was going to be like this bar, open bar situation. It was going to be like on a stage, but no, it was just this long line where he was serving drinks to everybody that was, and it was at the Stanley Hotel. Mm-hmm. November 12th through the 14th, I'm looking at our official signed poster right now, Estes Park, Colorado. And so I'm kind of working in my reverse chronological order on how I know about this movie, because that was a big thing for us. It was like one of the, probably the biggest purchases, travel purchases.
Yeah, it was our first like spendy vacation.
Yeah. That was just the two of us.
Yeah. It was really crazy because, like, there were tons of people who are maybe a little bit older than us who it was like, this is our weekend. And it was all, like, casual. And we're like, this is the most amazing thing that's ever going to happen. And we have to be super intense about it. It was our Disneyland, really.
Yeah.
I much preferred it to a trip to Disneyland, to be honest.
Yeah. Because there's, like, an actual celebrity instead of a person inside of a head.
Yeah. At that cocktail party, he served me a pink... And like, it's so funny because like, you get ushered into, it was a 2-hour line and you got ushered in groups of 4 or 6 or something like that. So we had like 2 other couples with us and they were like, oh yeah, Jack and Coke, Jack and Coke. And they were being, there's 2 women servers. And then, Bruce was there and, they're all like pouring Jacks and Cokes. And Jen's like, I like a ginger ale, which was super cute and very nice and super appropriate. And I like turned over, I thought I was being like, I wanted him to like me, but everybody wanted him to like them, him to like them. So like, I lean over and I'm like, I'd like a pink f-. it was not great, but I said, sorry.
If we get the opportunity, and I've been thinking about bringing us back onto Twitter because there's just so much going on there still that even though I may not really like the platform itself, that's where all of our people are. Mm. And it would be kind of nice, or we could use Instagram, but it would be kind of nice to share some of those old photos from 2021 and kind of bring them in this month. So that was cool. But the first thing, the first way how I came to this movie,
oh, yeah,
was I remember going into a movie theater and seeing a movie with my mom that was not Army of Darkness, but Jared, my brother, went to see Army of Darkness like by himself. And then I had like no knowledge about what that movie was about. I had never seen a trailer or anything like that. But then it did come out on like DVD. And before then, Jared and his one of his friends from school would just continually quote this movie. And it's, you know, it's basically the same thing that I do to Naomi all the time.
Same girl, same.
Yeah.
Same girl, same.
So I don't believe I saw it in the movie theater. If I did see it, or wherever I did see it, this was the first of the Evil Dead movies that I saw. I saw this one before I saw 1 and 2.
Well, Raimi was really good at like the exposition at the beginning of the film, so you really don't have, you can watch this standalone.
I did.
Yeah, and I had liked Darkman, so that was something else that I kind of knew about this, that it was the director of Darkman. But yeah, first intro to Bruce Campbell for sure. And just an iconic character.
Oh, I got introduced to him in Xena.
So Sean actually has a come to Army of Darkness moment.
Oh, yeah?
In his Sean facts.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Well, I'm gonna bring up...
The Sean facts button?
Yeah, I'm going to bring that up because I've got a surprise for you guys. Not as far as Sean facts go, but it's not really a surprise because I already told you what it was before we started recording. But yeah, so I'm keeping all of the soundboard like with volume, even though that's what we also use for our like tagging where our bleeps are. But let's get into it.
Sean facts.
Sean facts. Still love that. On a personal note, I actually saw this film in theaters. I was 15 at the time, and my friend Boyd took me. He was 20, so there wasn't any issues with the R rating. In fact, I was always thought that it was rated PG-13, so I never questioned it. I'm not sure why it's rated R. Anyway, the humor is right up my alley. The film was produced as part of a production deal with Universal Pictures after the financial success of Darkman in 1990, released in the United States on February 19th, 1993. And then actually, even though this is actually should be a separate fact, but we actually do have a how much it grossed and what its budget was. So you want to get into that?
Yeah, always. Because I realize I know so much about this movie, but that those particular facts are not stuck in my head.
Yeah. So, budget. What do we think the budget was on this movie?
Now, remind, you just had a success with Darkman.
Mm-hmm.
The previous two movies were successful considering their budgets,
mm-hmm.
I think.
This is also 1993 money.
1992 money.
1992 money.
Well, February 19th, 1993. So they
That's
would have already had.
Here.
Right. So right. The budget would have been for the production, obviously, which would have been the year before.
So I'm going to go ahead and say 25 million.
It does seem like a big budget movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. And there's so many practical effects that are just phenomenal.
Still hold up.
100%. I think it's something like I'm going to go out. If he's destroying 40 skeletons a day and they hired horses and they all that makeup, I'm going to say $10 million.
All right.
All right. Well, budget was $11 million.
I never get those. That's probably because I have it floating around somewhere in this murk that is my brain. I literally went to a presentation about this film. Let's blame that. Maybe it's in there. I don't know.
And what do we think the gross was? Lydia?
I'm going to go with it definitely made its money back, so 25 million.
I think it is more of a cult growing, so I think it has made more than its money back. But I think in the time it modestly went over the budget, $15 million.
So you think it grossed 15 over the 11 million, so 26?
No. I think it made 15. I think it's less than 20, but I think it's at least 15.
All right. Well, we have a tie because Lydia was the closest. It grossed 21.5 million theatrically and received generally positive reviews. We do have a little bit of a note, I think, from Siskel and Ebert on that as well. So most of this is going to be in scene, but I have a couple more things that are production related. A piece of Bruce Campbell's costume ended up scratching his face during a vigorous fight scene. He was rushed to the hospital in full costume, and once there, the doctor was terribly confused that to just what exactly was the stitch?
The makeup was so good. They were like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, he had several various special effects cuts and wounds painted on the face. And I've kind of mentioned or alluded to this with the ways that we've purchased it, but there are actually a lot of different cuts of this film. Kind of like how Blade Runner is. There are just lots of different ways that they've edited it. So why is that? Well, it really comes down to the rating. Uni, I guess that's Universal, wanted the film to go out to theaters as PG-13, and the initial submission was slapped with an NC-17.
That's some bullshit. I watched a documentary about the rating, movie rating thing. And it's just so incredibly arbitrary and biased. And so I just imagine Sam Raimi coming through with this gem of a movie. And he's all like, here you go. And they're like, oh, no, there was a cuss word and some boobs. And so now, and a font of blood. Okay, admittedly. But then they just, an NC-17.
Mm-hmm.
Name another NC-17. What, like a Showgirls?
Showgirls.
First thing that comes to mind. What? Not even the same. Level of the architecture of my brain that is movies. Like, they're not even on the same level.
So numerous attempts were made to tone the violence down, and an outside editor was eventually brought in to take a whack at it. That version, now known as the U.S. theatrical cut, had a runtime of 81 minutes, which is the shortest version, and still carried with it an R rating. Roger Ebert, notoriously rough on horror, had this to say at the time of the film's release. The movie isn't as funny or entertaining as Evil Dead 2. However, maybe because the comic approach seems recycled. Then again, the movie seems aimed at an audience of 14-year-olds who would have been 8 when Evil Dead 2 came out, so maybe this all seems breathtakingly original. There are some, like when you see at the credits at the end, there are some people listed under the category fake shemps. And a fake shemp is a term that originated from the Three Stooges. Shemp was actually a part of the original Stooges before leaving the trio and being replaced by Curly. After Curly's untimely death, Shemp stepped back into the to help the remaining brothers and carry on their lucrative careers. Unfortunately, only 9 years later, Shemp passed away of a heart attack, leaving numerous Stooges films unfinished, and producers then utilized various tricks to keep Shemp alive in the next several productions. They craftily would reuse previous footage of the star, interspersed with new shots of a stand-in, shot mostly from the back, thus fake Shemp. Sam Raimi would modernize the term fake shemp by using it to refer to actors who were unrecognizable in their roles due to heavy makeup, specific framing only showing their hands or feet, or for when an actor would stand in for another's role. Just a couple more, and then we'll get into the plot here. Ashley Joanna Ash Williams in 2013 was voted by Empire Magazine as the greatest horror film movie character ever. And Ash appears in Telltale Games' Poker Night 2. The player participates in a poker tournament against William Sam from Sam & Max, Claptrap from Borderlands, Brock Sampson from the Venture Brothers, and GLaDOS, who actually is the dealer, from Portal. According to in-game dialogue, Ash is Brock's ancestor through time travel, as Ash has had slept with a woman whose family line Brock is a member of sometime during his adventure in Army of Darkness. In another conversation between Ash and Brock, it is revealed that the store Ash previously worked for, S-Mart, is confirmed to exist in the Venture Brothers universe. And finally,
Why haven't I played that?
Yeah, seriously. And then Ash is also a playable character in Dead by Daylight, which I think we've seen Shandytown play at least once, but that is it for introduction and production-related Sean facts, and the rest of these three pages is in scene.
Yay!
So you ready to hop into this?
Yeah, let's go, go, go!
So we start out in the opening screen. We see feet walking in a desert, and the when the credits are coming up, it kind of gives me this feel with the way that the music is swelling, that it's very much Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, yeah. Danny Elfman did the music.
Yes.
And it is, he just went full like Lord of the Rings on it. He's like, the music needs to be epic. And yeah, like, you'd think it, I mean, like the way that we'll describe certain parts, you'd think it'd all be yakety sax, but it's just like very much like, well, I'm about to like quote Shrek, but it's like,
Yeah.
Very operatic.
Yeah, it's trying to lean into the mythology of, because I think the king's name is Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
They never say the wizard's name is Merlin, but
He's a wise man. He essentially is Merlin.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first note is Ash in Chains. And when I was reading it over again, I was like Alice in Chains? Yeah.
nice.
And flashback, because, I mean, we're starting on something very dramatic,
we got narration, we got a lot of exposition to get us to this moment, because what is this modern guy doing in medieval times?
He is missing a hand, which gets explained in the flashback.
He's got his little stump in the stocks, like it wouldn't slide right out.
What was his girlfriend's name?
Linda.
Linda?
Yeah.
And they had, oh gosh, what was her name? That, Bridget Fonda. We have a thing for Fondas, apparently.
We like Jane Barbara. Fonda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
have we done Barbarella yet?
We have.
We did do Barbarella.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for about a million years. Yeah, friggin' Barbarella.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't the original Linda in Evil Dead 2, but
all the Lindas are different. It's never the same Linda.
Yeah.
But there's always a Linda.
Yeah. And for this one, she was just, I think she was a big fan of Darkman or something, and she just wanted to be a part of the movie. So they just brought her in. I thought that was pretty cool. That wasn't in Sean's notes, but I remember Bruce talking about that.
We'll go by first names now.
Mr. Campbell.
I mean, if this man doesn't bring out the daddy issues of every human woman that has ever existed, I mean, like, he's strong. He's powerful. He's a possessing force. And you're like, oh, Mr. Campbell. Even like now, he's not like wizened or anything, but he's like the same age as my parents. And so like, I'm like,
I mean, he's old enough to be your dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, and if I wasn't a person who thought it was super gross to say, he's more of a daddy. I don't like it though. So
every time I say daddy, it's always ironic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like,
cause if
it's not a 6 year old or younger, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. There comes a point in your life when you just stop calling your daddy, daddy. You just call him dad.
Yeah, I started calling my dad pops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Daddy side note complete.
We never have to say it again. And we can just like lust after him in a way.
Right. So the flashback consists of Ash narrating everything that happened, that he worked at S-Mart in housewares, and he takes a trip to a cabin in the woods with his girlfriend Linda, but it was a cabin that an archaeologist was using to translate the Necronomicon, which is the Book of the Dead, and it's bound out of flesh and written in blood. Also, this is basically the plot of Evil Dead 2.
And Evil Dead 1.
And Evil Dead 1.
And technically, this is sort of Evil Dead 4, because before they had the first Evil Dead, they had like a student film that was basically the same theme.
I don't think I've seen the student film.
No, I don't think it's seen the light of day. But the reason that Evil Dead was able to get produced was because they showed that low budget film to enough people and got some local funding.
Evil Dead cost $10,000.
That sounds a lot like the inception of What We Do in the Shadows. They had like a 30-minute video that they did, or like a 20 to 30-minute video. And then that video ended up getting them a studio to support them. Yeah. I mean, it's also like Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement. And they had like, I think by the time that the What We Do in the Shadows original video came out, they had already had like, you know, their clout from Flight of the Conchords. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I just also think that student films and just short films in general give proof of concept for really creative things to happen.
Agreed.
Got a couple of S-Mart specific things here. S-Mart is a chain of grocery stores in Mexico. And there was a possible Raimi at the Stanley Hotel.
Okay, so they had a whole like subplot that tied into the mystery dinner we went to. And I'm abhorrent at solving clues. Like I follow a plot line. When we watch a mystery or a murder show, I'm like, oh, that guy did it. And it ruins it a little bit sometimes, and I'm sorry I do that. But like when it comes to like, and here's some facts, now link them all together, my brain's like, can't do it, may not compute. So like, but I'm terribly interested in character actors. So there's this guy who introduced Bruce Campbell for all of the events where he would appear. And we were specifically interested in watching the movies with him. So we made sure we were like in line well before every iteration of the movies that they played. And he introduced it. His name was...
I don't remember. I just know he was like regional manager for S-Mart.
Yeah, he had a suit. And everybody was like trying to figure out what his whole deal was, because he was obviously doing a bit. And oh, and during like the store time, they had like all these little vendors. He was like standing there handing out S-Mart, S-Mart applications. We got a couple of them. They're pretty awesome. They're like, have you or anyone you know ever been possessed by a demon? It's a great little bit. And at the mystery dinner, Bruce Campbell, of course, like leads you through and like gives you the clues and sets you up for these things. And does he die? Did he die? He got possessed, though.
The S-Mart manager?
Yeah.
No. Well, he was turning people into deadites.
Yeah.
And at the end, when they solved that it was him doing all of this stuff, they took him away, and he's like guards took him away, and we all felt like empowered by Bruce Campbell that we solved this thing, because he was pretending to be Ash.
Yeah, it was awesome. But we spent all weekend trying to figure out what this guy's deal was, because the dinner wasn't until like the last day, or maybe the day before the last day. We'd hung out with him for like a day and a half at least. And so, but I'm like, Jen, is that guy a Raimi? Because he straight up looked like a Raimi. I thought like for a second, I was like, is that Ted? No. No, 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 no. But maybe like their little, is there a third Raimi? I don't know. No, there isn't, Jen just said with her face.
Well,
but it makes me wonder if it's like Ted's nephew or
like
son
or something.
Well, there are three Raimis that are credited in this movie. Sam Raimi, Ted Raimi, and Ivan Raimi.
I don't know anything about Ivan Raimi. I couldn't pick him
up. He wasn't any of the top three, for sure. He just had the facial structure.
Narrow nose and like almost a flattened brow, and like certainly the hair texture, caucasity, yeah, as well. Like the nerd feel, the vibe of it. I was like, he's slender and he's like a little, like he was supposed to be weaselly. One time we went to go grab, there's a famous a diner out there that had a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives about them. And we went there to buy dinner and take it back to the hotel room because there's no way we could get seating in there. And he's standing there. And I'm like, hi, I just want to tell you you're doing a really good job. And he's like, oh, thanks. And I like shook his hand. And then I like retreated like a mouse because I don't like to interact with famous people because I feel like it's not my place. I'm not like, if you're existing, that doesn't mean I have to like approach you. So like, I don't want to, but I want to tell you you're doing a good job.
So one more S-Mart related thing. According to Sam Raimi in the book, The Evil Dead Companion by Bill Warren, Charles Napier was to play Ash's boss in S-Mart, but his role was totally cut. Also, Bridget Fonda's role was scheduled to have more screen time as well. So anything more on the kind of intro bringing everybody up to speed?
Well, the important things that need to be said are Linda ends up dying.
Mm-hmm.
Ash gets sucked into a portal and his hand is gone because it would.
He had to chop it off because he got bit.
Yeah, it got it went evil. Uh-huh. And he had to, you know, cut off his right hand despite his left.
If there's any reason to watch Evil Dead 2, it's the hand stuff. Wait.
That's intentional. You think the Raimis didn't put that in?
But we do know that his car gets sucked in, and the car is actually Sam Raimi's famous. Is it, there are notes about it?
No, I don't think there.
Oh, so
is.
Sam Raimi had this car that was in all of his like original shorts, and it was his tooling around thing when he was starting out with film. And since then, it has been in every Sam Raimi film since, including Spider-Man. It's dropped it in everywhere. It's like literally dropped into this film from a vortex. And then he's had it refitted and redone so many times. Every time he obliterates it, he fixes it. And now he's the money to do it, so he always does it. There's some part of that original car in that thing, and it's in every movie. And so you have to keep an eye out for that, you know, two-door cream-colored. Is it a soft top? It's not a soft top.
I don't think so.
It's in Benedict Cumberbatch is in a Marvel universe.
Doctor Strange 2.
It's in Doctor Strange 2.
Oh, that's right, because Sam Raimi did Doctor Strange.
And if you stay and watch all the way through the credits, at the end, Bruce Campbell's character he's been enchanted by Doctor Strange, and his hand keeps slapping him in the face. And that is an homage right. to Evil Dead 2.
He also says, it's over, it's over, it's over, and it's an end credits scene. It's like the very last one. I always like it when they're like, oh, it's the end. You don't have to be here anymore. You can go away, you know?
Yeah, break the fourth wall for me.
Yeah, especially at the end. So.
I like when it's humorous because like if I'm staying towards the end and sometimes it's okay that it's like this big drop is going to happen or like Superman will return as like whatever, right?
Right.
Like, okay. But I just sat through 2 hours of drama. Give me a little mint on my pillow at the end. You know what I'm saying?
Give me some humor.
I just want a little bit of sweetness to finish off the meal.
Right.
Did the car already fall? Was that part of the intro?
Mm-hmm. You actually see, it's funny, he times the car drop for the same time that Ash drops. Mm-hmm. And in that scene, you can actually see the mats he falls onto.
Yeah. But we're still kind of in the flashback at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, he my note is, let's do the time warp again, because he goes back in time, and mm-hmm. it's literally a warp.
It's fun.
It's a portal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is after Ash ends up falling down with his car and there's a tree that gets sucked up in there too, he gets surrounded by these, you know, very medieval looking knights and they pull swords and
King named Arthur shows up and he's like, they're all poking him and prodding him and he's like obviously out of sorts.
Right. And a couple of them are like poking the car.
and stab it with their sword.
And Arthur's like, wise man, come over here and give me some advice. And the wise man's like, oh, I think this is the prophesied one. And Merlin and Arthur says, bullshit, he's one of Henry's men. And he points to the people that are in chains and everything. And I'm like, wow, this is very much like the beginning of Skyrim.
I don't know nothing about Skyrim except they were in a cart and you kind of like wake up.
Yeah,
there's a meme.
Yeah, you're like in chains and everybody thinks that you are... everyone thinks that you're part of like the prisoners with them. So it's just kind of like convenient that Arthur was like looking for a reason to get another one.
I've got a car note here. I've got two car notes, but one of them I'll save until later. During filming, it's an Oldsmobile Delta 88.
See, I totally knew.
Fell out of the sky, and that was shot twice. During the first attempt, the 25-ton crane lifting the car failed due to mechanical problems and toppled over the edge of a cliff at the quarry location where filming was taking place. Fortunately, no injuries occurred because the crane operator jumped from the cab before the crane went over the edge. Days later, a larger 80-ton crane was brought in to remove the damaged crane and reshoot the car drop. In the final edit, elements of the reshoots, as well as footage from The Evil Dead 2, were used.
The last thing that we need to say about the flashback is that the wise man grabs the chainsaw because he sees this chainsaw. And he's like, oh, wow, this is a mighty sword. Or he doesn't say it, but he looks on like he's saying.
Yeah. And
like
he glints it to the camera so that we can go back to the stocks, chains, horses, and narration.
Repetitive storytelling.
It should have been like, you're probably wondering how my life got like this. It's kind of crazy. Record scratch. Anyway, so now let's go to a medieval castle, which we never actually see, really. We see like a tower and walls and nothing else of everyday medieval life because it would have been too expensive.
Yeah, totally painted when they're walking into it.
Oh, yeah. Not mad about it.
The soldiers are back home. Also, dead brother?
Right. So whenever this chick gets on the screen, and no, I don't ever remember her name.
Sheila.
That's right. Stupid.
It sounds like it wouldn't work for this time period, but when I went into the origins of the name of Sheila, and it does actually kind of fit, which is weird because, like, in our context, Sheila sounds like such an 80s name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for like a love interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But every time she comes on screen, and here's the thing, you know, I'm pro female protagonist. I am about the ladies, right? But every time she comes on the screen, my brain goes, this bitch, this bitch, this bitch. I genuinely don't know if I'm supposed to like her.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of save it for the end, but this is actually a pretty common storytelling trope where you have the damsel in distress and you could essentially replace her with a sexy lamp and still have the exact same, you know. She has no bearing on the plot. She doesn't do anything that wouldn't have already happened.
She only does like one minor thing that we'll touch on later that really does affect the plot, but it could have easily been anybody else.
Right. So it's nothing very specific with her specific background. Like she's like, oh, Arthur, I didn't see my brother. Didn't he go with you? And he was like, I'm sorry. He fell in battle. And
to Eric's men.
To Henry's men.
Henry's men.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just Eric'd and my brain just stuck on it. Yeah. And her entire arc is, I hate him. I love him. I hate him. I love him. I miss him. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all.
That's essentially like everything about her.
Yeah.
She doesn't have any. I mean, you could try and say that she was given pathos with a dead brother, but if I thought that someone had killed my brother, I would have mixed feelings about wanting a romantic relationship with him.
I got problems with that. But like, it's very much the Marleys were dead to begin with. So I don't care. I don't care about her brother at all. And so like, how am I supposed to care about her when she literally spits in the face of the most beautiful man in this movie?
But she also does another action that the rest of the crowd is doing, which is pelting ash with rocks, fake rocks that were used, but to get a more realistic reaction out of Bruce Campbell, and partially as a prank, director Sam Raimi pelted him with potatoes. And that's the cut they used.
So, and I don't know if you know this, but Sam Raimi has this absolute bloodlust for beating the shit out of Bruce Campbell. Every film, it does not matter. And he's like, let's try it again, but harder. Let's try it again, but harder. And he does it over and over again until, like, Bruce cannot literally take anymore. And I was thinking about it while watching this film, and it happens so many times, and it goes so more and more over the top that when I was watching the credits and it goes, co-produced by Bruce Campbell, I was like, he wanted it.
Or he was like, I will allow it if I get a producer's credit.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's smart business managing. That's smart negotiating.
I don't know what it is, but it is hilarious. And so every time it's over the top, I'm going to try to point it out because it's just so good.
Okay, so Ash is the first one in chains, and he's at the front of the group. And whenever...
He's second in line.
I thought he was front.
Nope.
Second?
He's second for reasons.
Okay. But when he's getting paraded in through the castle, you all have all these children beating up on him and they're doing
and
the...
And you go, we're children!
Yes!
I wrote it down because I was like, Lydia's going to notice.
Yeah.
She's going to make that Kung Pao reference.
Yeah.
Yes. Because they're just like, ha, 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 ha,
you have these like children.
And they just beat on this guy.
They're laughing and beating on him. This was the entertainment from the 1300s.
I guess so. Mother, I want to go out into the country and beat up a man.
Well, we're rich, darling, so make sure you use the heftiest of potatoes.
The heftiest of potatoes. Oh, my gosh. So...
And then Sheila comes out of nowhere and is just sort of like, I'll get revenge for my brother, and starts beating up on him.
Yeah, she specifically grabs his hair, twists it, spits in his face. It looks like she's really going after him. Mm-hmm. So realism, or was she put up to it by Sam? I really want you to rip a chunk of hair out.
It's okay. He's totally on board. He's a producer.
It's fine. Oh, okay. So they come to the pit, and the pit looks like a portal. I know we've said a word portal a lot lately, and I'm sorry about this, but it's big and it's metal and it looks way too fancy for this castle.
It kind of like when we it definitely like the cover of it looks metal. When we actually get into the pit, it looks like it's kind of this underground reservoir, like its own sewer.
Like it would have been a well, maybe.
Yeah.
But like every moment up to it makes me feel about the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, it definitely feels a little bit more sci-fi than fantasy because they're using actual metal instead of like stone.
I think it's made out of wood, though, because they had a ton of carpenters on this guy.
Yeah.
They had to. They kept blowing everything up and it had to be rebuilt the next day because Sam would be like, I want another shot.
Have we met Henry? Or are we about to meet
Henry?
Henry?
We're about to. This is where the king is all like, and we have been we have this, you know, plague of deadites coming in and destroying our kingdom. And as it does, you, Henry, come and attack us while we're weak. And
this evil has befallen my people as well.
And Henry is like, push. So Henry has a very much a Scottish accent.
Mm-hmm.
And with Arthur having a very English accent, it's like, I kind of side with Henry when he says,
100%.
No, you guys have been attacking me. Like the English kind of started it, which historically speaking is accurate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But with the whole deadites, you know, attacking both of them, there's, you know, still like this war going on. But there's like an even greater force that is, you know, attacking both of them.
Yeah.
And instead of like fighting internally, they should really be looking out.
Right. They're both accusing each other of the demon thing. But I'd be like, hey, you hate the demon thing and I hate the demon thing. Maybe we should fight the demon thing together.
I know. It's almost like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, they have Henry captured and they're going to throw him and his men into the pit.
Now, this is why Bruce is second in line, because King Arthur is like, you're all sentenced to the pit, blah, blah, blah. The pit opens. The first guy is shoved in.
Right.
And splash. And everybody leans in. Like, you see people put their foot on the edge of the portal to look in the pit, to look in the pit of despair, if you will. And they all look in and there's like this long, long beat. And then whoosh, a font of blood that is at least two stories tall shoots straight up. And it like, and you can tell, and I don't know if you've noticed, but everyone was directed out of the way of I think it was to save having to clean all the costumes, but like the blood gets on nearly no one. And then they all crowd, and then once the blood stops, you can tell that they've all been directed to run back around the pit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Bruce is like, oh, right? And then he's like, hey man, who are you? And King Henry, he says, I'm King Henry of the Northern Lands, and other words I don't remember to say. And do you have a button for it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have for the title.
Okay, so he's just like, I'm from the Northern Lands. And Bruce looks at him like sideways and he goes,
well, hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
And then like he says,
You gotta tell him I'm not with you.
Well, that comes a little bit later. I think Henry is talking about like his, like what he is in charge of, like I am in charge of my men and or something like that.
Well, there's a second part to Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants, which is,
I got news for you, pal. You ain't leading but two things right now. Jack and Jack left town.
Yeah, that's that's essentially the interaction between him and Henry.
Yeah, but he wants him to convince. Eventually, Henry's like, I don't think they'll believe me.
Right.
When I say you're not my man.
Right.
And so Bruce is let out of the stocks.
But like right after the blood geyser, I think one of Henry's men end up running away. And that's when Arthur takes the arrow in this movie, too.
Yes. So we learn that the pit is deadly, but also you can't make a break for it.
Right. I started to hope that maybe something would have like saved Ash outside of just his sheer gumption. Like a dragon attacking, but it didn't happen.
Because and if you've watched the series, which I'm sure you have.
Ash versus Evil?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It was a two season?
Yeah.
I watched it cover to cover a couple times, actually. And the premise of that is like, it is actually a beautiful love letter that sums all of the whole Evil Dead thing up for Ash's character. And it's good. It's good because he can be done with it because he'd had this final fan service kind of moment at the end of the second season. But what the great thing about it is that he's dubbed El Jefe by a very adorable character that you would love, a slightly effeminate Hispanic character.
I think I know the character you're thinking of, and I did love him.
Right? Well, the thing is that Ash is explained in that as being this kind of cosmic character that has to exist and that he can't fail because he has this grand destiny. And that's why he keeps succeeding, even though he keeps getting thrown at him, like harder than, take your fan to work today at the factory.
I would also like to note Raimi Cam happens on the arrow shooting.
Yes. Raimi Cam is like anytime you're like the danger, you are the danger.
Yeah.
And it's just like a wobble shaky cam that does whatever it is that's happening that's evil.
Yeah. And instead of a shaky cam being, you know, you are that thing. It's from the arrow's perspective getting
POV.
Shot. Yeah. Which was very Robin Hood Prince of Thieves, which I think
I've never
was
watched.
After this one. I don't remember for sure.
I want to say it was like, it was early 90s, so it could have been.
My timeline says Prince of Thieves probably came out first.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. But you see that tracking done in Evil Dead. So even if Prince of Thieves did that with the arrow, Sam Raimi has been doing it for like all the time. So really, Prince of Thieves stole it from him. He's just like putting it onto an arrow. So
have we missed the part where when he's like going wildly, like don't throw me in the pit. He goes, look, I've never even seen these assholes before.
Right.
It's just so good.
Yeah. And Sheila throws a rock and hits him in the head.
So he stumbles to the edge of the pit.
And then one of the guards pushes him in.
And then he does his classic Bruce Campbell somersault.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see him do it several times throughout the film, but this is our first one. And it's just so good. He just ass over tea kettle, like just nails it every time.
Right. And when he lands in the pit, he lands in some water. And it's very much like this underground cavern feel with a giant circle in front of you. You see like these two walls of spikes and a chain. And what else do we see, Naomi?
A feminine hand with gnarly nails reaching up. And as he turns, and this is another thing that Sam loves to do, as if I know Sam personally, Bruce turns and the hand sinks down before he can actually see it. But he, because of his El Jefe knowledge, he's all like, ah, yes, there's something here with me. Also the font of blood earlier.
Right.
And his other previous experience over the last 2 days.
Right.
But my notes go, he's so manly. And I hate myself for it. But see also Howl's Moving Castle for me fawning stupidly over masculine presenting characters.
So long as you are aware of why you could potentially lean into that, and it sounds like you are aware of the problematic elements of it.
Yeah. This is the thing. There's lots of complexes and industries that I don't have control over. Maybe even, for example, like the beef industry, but sometimes I still enjoy a steak.
I know.
Just take the choice cuts. And Bruce Campbell is one of them. Let us go on. We are in the pit. Shall we battle?
Yes.
A pit hag emerges. This bitch grabs him by the collar and just punches. And in that way that Sam takes it over the top, you'd think it'd be like three punches, right? Like, oh, he gets punched a whole bunch. He gets punched like 15 times in the face. Like, it is like three comedic beats in. And you're like, oh, wow. He's really getting it. And he's probably not getting actual contact, but I just imagine the whiplash of him having to flip his head back every time. Hilarious. So then that part changes and they do battle.
Right. And this is essentially an action scene that we are bad at narrating. So mm-hmm. we're not going to. I do like how it's a little bit campy. Mm-hmm. And I want to point that out because later on, the camp gets turned up to 11.
100%. So,
but it feels gradual.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
I know that's not real, the whole frog in a pot of water thing, but the idea of being gradually introduced to a level of ridiculousness, like a frog would have gotten out of the pot.
Yeah.
But the experiment they're talking about, they'd stab the vertebrae of it, so it couldn't, so it doesn't notice. Anyways, it's not as clean of a metaphor as people like to say it is.
Right.
But we are gradually introduced, like you say.
Right. The it's easier to kind of, like, when you get to that extreme side, mm-hmm. it's almost like it's a lot more palatable because of how serious it starts out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like everybody, Ash is the odd man out, but also the Deadites are too. It almost feels like everything that Ash did in Evil Dead 2 had followed him to this time frame, and you know, because time travel is weird, they just got there earlier, started wreaking havoc and everything. But it also, what it really feels like is not just like easier to take in, but it kind of like everybody but Ash is taking this very seriously.
Well, yeah, because he's seen it. He's like, I know what this crazy looks like.
What's nice about it is everybody in that time period is kind of, you know, acting as someone from that time period would act, like, mm-hmm. oh, it's a demon, oh, it's, you know, it's a devil, ah. But I mean, Ash is still acting like a very present modern day man.
Thank you, Applauder, for joining us for part one of our review and walkthrough of 1992's Sam Raimi classic Army of Darkness. We've still got a fistful of boomstick left to share with you all through the month of March, and can't wait to give you more Sean facts and our shocked and applaudable moments. Were you recently transported to the distant past and have some time to kill? On the Vintage Video Podcast, Patrick, Jesse, and Richard are rewatching and reviewing every major film release of the 1980s. And on BitStorm, join Trevor and Ben as they take prompts from random word generators, movies, game titles, and more, and turn them into occasionally hilarious but always interesting game designs. Check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and someone who frequently shops Kmart, Jen. Looking for the sweetest deal in town and love it when women curse when they're excited? You should become an official Applauder. For only $1 per month, you get access to our entire back catalog of unbleeped episodes, as well as help us pay for hosting. Visit shockedandapplaud.com and click the Become an Applauder link at the top of the page. We'll be back next week for part two of this action, adventure, horror, comedy. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.